What's good, everyone? Chris the Starting Show here. And before we get into today's episode, I just have a couple announcements I want to make. The first one is I have started my own YouTube channel where I'm here to help people save, grow, and protect their money. So make sure you subscribe to my channel. And also here on the Roommates platform, I am interviewing people around finances. So I have people coming with real estate about how to pay down debt, how to invest, all those different things. So I want you all to do to make sure you get your pen and your paper out and take notes, because the information that is provided during these podcast episodes are so valuable. And with that being said, let's get started with today's episode.
People say, I'm going to hold this stock because I think it's going to go up. Well, let me ask you this. How many people watching this right now are in a relationship? It's toxic. And you're in that relationship for two reasons. One, maybe it'll get better. Or B, number two, the sunk cost fallacy. I've put money or time into this, therefore I am committed to it. I can't let it go until I recoup what I put into it. No. Because just like that stock that you don't sell and you bag hold forever, think about that in your life. You're in a relationship with a man or a woman and you're not in love anymore, or they're abusive, or they treat you like crap, or, you know, you just don't feel it anymore, but you stay with them because, you know, I don't want to be alone, or it's going to get better, or they're going to change. And you do that for so long, and all the opportunities to find the perfect person, you never get a chance to go out and find that opportunity. You let it all pass you by because you're so tunnel vision on this.
What's good, everyone? Welcome back to the podcast. Chris, the star of the show here, and do I have a treat for you all. You all know I'm doing this financial series, and I had to get the best guest possible, and I'm telling you, my guest today is really, really big. I am grateful. I am excited. I am so happy that he is here, because this man is not only knowledgeable, but he actually cares about his audience and actually helping people. So without further ado, I would like you all to welcome the stock guy, Jason Frank. What's going on, Jay?
Hey, Chris, how are you, man? Appreciate you inviting me on.
I'm good, man. Yeah, for real. Like I love people like you, you know, that has really, like, you have the power of financial knowledge, and you can use that power to really change someone's life and also you can change their family life and even change their family generational life. And for you to have that information and to share with other, man, I really, it warms my heart to see people like you that can give back with that capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I come from, you know, a level of poverty that you only see in third world countries. So, you know, I was just in L.A. a couple weeks ago for the Streamer Awards, and it was the first time I'd been to Los Angeles since I was 4 years old. And when I was there, my father, myself, and his friend were staying on Skid Row, and we would go, and they would use me to panhandle to say, oh, it's my son, we need to eat and stuff like that. And we'd panhandle, and they would take the money to go get drugs and get high, and I would just be doing my thing, you know, and then go to Hawaii, no electricity, no running water. I was always sick. I come from a level, before the state took me away, I come from a level of poverty and generational poverty that it was one of those things where it never occurred to me. Any of this stuff. And so the journey to get from there to here has been full of ups, but more importantly, full of downs. And what I tried to do was always learn from those mistakes. And what I thought was, you know what? What if I could throw out some of those experiences and not only the good things I did, but the mistakes I made and what I learned from them, and pass that on to other people? Sure. Most people are just going to take it with a grain of salt, but every now and then you might change somebody, and I get paid to do it. So I love it. And I'm so happy and so grateful to have that opportunity and to even speak to new audiences like yours.
Man, that's a beautiful story. And I really want, like, to really go in depth with the story, because, you know, my audience, we like to hear people's background, people's journey, especially because we're young and we have so much life to live. But it's beautiful to see the journey of people to becoming who they are and finding their purpose, finding their passion. So can you also give us a little bit more in depth of your childhood and how you became the stock guy today?
I mean, that's a big a big journey.
Yeah.
But the quickest way to do it is, you know, really rough childhood. My father was a drug addict. Mother was a drug addict and a stripper. They were just destined to get together. They hooked up. They, you know, whatever. They split up. I was in between them, living in some stuff. You know, they used me for government. What do you call it?
Assistance.
Know, government. Funds. Assistance. Food stamps, yeah. You know, whatever you want. I remember eating government cheese and rice with ranch powder dressing, and we had an outhouse and we had no running water. So, you know, I really, really, really remember those things. And it was a back and forth thing. But as a kid, you don't know any different, right? You don't know any different. It's just one of those things where it's like, this is the life you live. So you don't know that this is bad or good, you know, always sick and having these problems. So eventually the state took me away and I ended up growing up in a children's home. And that was another one that was really tough. And it was another one of those, you know, like I don't know what it's like to have family and parents and stuff like that. Got bullied a lot in school. It came with the territory. You know, you didn't have parents. You lived in a home. It is what it is. Small town. Ended up going into the military. It was the only option I had. I was really smart. But I have what I found out later on was severe clinical ADHD, and not the little ADHD like I am hyper. No, like I can't function on a daily basis because I can't focus on a task. I can't complete things. I can't, you know, hold conversations. So went in the military, served in Afghanistan, did Katrina, the whole nine yards, came out, had nothing, didn't know what I was going to do, didn't have any family, the military doesn't exactly give you assistance on the way out. They're just kind of like, hey, thanks for everything, good luck. So bounced around, worked in private security, did some other stuff, made a lot of mistakes, got heavy into the bad crowd, made a lot of bad mistakes there, kind of had to reset my life, kind of cleaned up my act, if you want to put it, and then just started a new journey. And at one point I had to start over at 26 or 7. I had to go work at a Burger King. Like I had to swallow my pride and go work at a Burger King as a porter, and just did my job 100% and got out in the lobby and smiled and made people happy and asked them if something was wrong and just took it upon myself. And the next thing you know, someone sees me and says, hey man, you're really good with people. You ever thought about working in hospitality? And I said, I don't know. I'm a GM at a hotel. I want you to be my bellman. Okay. Went and was a bellman. And then stayed early, came early, stayed late to learn how to do the front desk stuff. Next thing you know, front desk position opened up. I was qualified, moved up. Concierge, front desk manager, operations manager, and I moved my way up. And all the while, I remembered 2008, there was a movie called Zeitgeist. Now, that's a very, very polarizing video, and there's obviously three parts to it, the 9/11, the religion, and the money. And I really got interested in money. I was like, wow, that's so cool. You know, I kind of went down the rabbit hole of the Federal Reserve and the gold standard and how money works and how, you know, the world works, and started understanding, you know, whatever, a lot of that. And that was always in the back of my hand. And so when I would get bored, I would go in and, you know, deep dive and rabbit hole. And I learned so much about the financial world and watched it in application. So I know this story's dragging on, but I'm going to get there.
No, you're fine. So eventually, you're fine.
I moved up to direct a large hotel resort overnight, which means I got home at 9 a.m. Right before the stock market opened. And I had been investing for a long time because I had started to understand what makes a company move, what makes money flow, what makes, you know, a sector strong, because it's not about now, it's about down the road, right? And so I started investing. Then I started trading. And I lost it all. I went in thinking I was going to do this. Oh, I'll find a penny stock here, or who tells me what to buy here, or this. Blew up my account.
Wow.
I just kept losing. And I eventually started saying, you know what? What am I doing wrong? What if I take this serious? So I stepped back and I started understanding what makes stuff move, right? And I learned it's all guessing. Mm. There is no such thing as a course that's going to make you rich. Anybody who's trying to tell you that they're gonna make you a good trader or buy your course and I'll teach you how to do this and be successful like me, they're lying to you.
Mm.
Everyone's guessing. So I realized, okay, you're guessing, but that doesn't mean you can't buy good companies that are on a discount, because eventually they'll go back up. And so I did that, and then I started learning other things, and then I started understanding, and then it came down, my success, I guess you could call it, came down to one thing, and that's discipline. And so That's how my financial journey came from and how I became the stock guy. Hopefully, you know, I'm not going too long here, but the thing about the stock guy was, is I was trading stocks, like I said, and it was lonely. It's a lonely job. It's a lonely thing to do. And I was like, all right, let me look around the internet and see if there's anyone out there that, you know, any groups that I could be part of. And I didn't find any that wasn't either pumping and dumping, a bunch of dumb people just spouting off stuff, or people trying to sell me a scam. So I said, you know what? Maybe I'll hang out with people. I'll turn on my camera and hang out with people. And then a couple people showed up, and then all of a sudden people came in and started asking questions that I had the answer to.
Mm.
And I was able to explain it in a funny, interesting way that they were like, oh, wow, now I understand. And I was like, maybe I've got something here. So I just kept doing it. And I moved more away from the trading and more into answering questions and teaching people. And then I was like, you know what? I was focusing more on building the community. And then COVID happened, moved up, and then GameStop happened. And then now here we are, a big community of people who hang out all day. Some people trade, some people invest, some people are just there for the jokes. Some are there for the motivation, some there are for the whatever it is. And it's just an amazing thing. And the amount of people that I've been able to help over the course of the last few years and the messages I get sent, you know, I'm not going to lie and be that guy who's like, that's what makes it me do it every day. I wake up every day. No, it feels good. But I also get paid to do it. This is my job. So I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a straight shooter. You know, I don't sell anything. I don't scam anybody. I'm just a guy. But people sub to me on Twitch and they give donations if something happens or whatever. So as long as I get to help people and get paid doing it, yeah.
You know, I mean, it sounds like a beautiful job to me, in my opinion. I think I wanted to know when was that aha moment and what kept you going? Because you had a lot of things that you had, really a lot of excuses for you to just, you know, not continue to move forward, or you could have given up. But what kept pushing you going to where you are today?
It's tough to put it down on one thing. I oftentimes look at things and say, when somebody tells me I can't do something, I want to do it. Or when something has never been done before, I want to do it or give it a shot when I get around to it because I'm so ADHD, right? Like if I remember to do it. But I think it was just the idea that I was always alone, and I always had the mindset that I'm in this world alone. I didn't have family. I didn't have parents. I didn't understand what love and affection was, and I did everything on my own. And it was like every time I wanted to give up, and I came so close so many times, every time I wanted to give up, I just kept saying to myself, what if? You know what I mean? What if I try something and it does work out? And everyone is always saying to me, you know what, this, that, whatever, I'm going to prove them wrong. I'm going to be successful. I'm going to do it. Because at that time, as a lot of young men do, we care so much more about what other people think. We never become ourselves and never become our own individuals. We only become a reflection of the people around us that we're trying to impress. And we never actually become ourselves until it's so late in life that the people you tried to impress didn't want to be with you because you're fake. And the people who would have wanted to be with you for you don't want to be with you because you're fake. You know what I'm saying? So it was a crazy journey. And I think more along the lines of one of those, like, it's easy to give up. It's easy to give up. And what do I have if I give up? Nothing. Let me see what happens. Let me keep moving forward because it's not easy. The life is about hard knocks. And, you know, I just keep getting up. And that was what it was. And there was more. I've had more failures in my life than I've had successes. And I think that it's okay to fail as long as you fail forward.
I love that. That's something that we preach to our audience as well. It's okay to feel like you have failed or you have fallen, but long as you're falling in the right direction, you know, as long as you continue to get.
And your failures aren't what your failures. I apologize. It's just you got me thinking of something I've told my,
no, go
my
ahead.
Audience is that your failures, your misgivings, your addictions, your whatever you've done do not define you. That
Amen.
Is not what defines you. What defines you is how you overcome it and what you do moving forward. If you are an alcoholic or a drug addict, right? And you have hurt a lot of people. My father was a drug addict. I've lived around addicts my whole life. I've dealt with my own demons. You're going to hurt people. Okay? You have hurt people or you are hurting people. But when you get clean or when you're wanting to get clean or when you've moved past that, You don't go around the rest of your life thinking that that's what defines you. No, that is in your past. That is a dark time. That is a mental. It is not. We shun people with addictions, whether it's drugs, alcohol, gambling, whatever. We shun those people, and we don't look at it like the same as somebody with a mental disability, right? You don't shun those people. You want to help them. But addictions are mental disabilities as well. So whatever it is, any mistakes, they don't define you. How you overcome them, what you do moving forward, that's what defines you.
Yo, what's good, everybody? We're going to take a quick pause from this week's amazing episode to talk to you guys about our amazing sponsors over at Skillshare. Guys, Skillshare is a real A1 day one from the roommates, and we absolutely love Skillshare because they are a unique online learning community where men and women can learn all types of creative and entrepreneurial skills. Man, so many men for the past years and the roommates have been learning, have been blossoming, have been transforming from Skillshare, because not only do you get the first month free to test it out, but Skillshare has such a vast library of courses, of resources that you guys can be able to tap into today. Go to Skillshare.com/roommates and take advantage of this opportunity. Guys, on the podcast, we meet so many amazing men and women who are so talented, but they didn't get their skills overnight. They had to master these things, and Skillshare gives you all the resources that you can be able to master your best self and tap into your full potential. So do not delay. Get on Skillshare today. Go to Skillshare.com/roommates. Trust me, you'll thank us later. And let's get back to this week's episode.
Hey, man, I love everything you said. There's no point in me to rehash that. I think that is beautifully well said. So let's educate the people, you know. So what are stocks? You know, what is the stock market, and why should people get involved?
So the stock market is a very complex subject. And I think that when people hear stock market, they automatically think Wall Street, right? Mm. It's people yelling, trying to buy and sell and this and people eating caviar and smoking cigars. That's just a very tiny portion of it. And a lot of those people hate their lives anyways. The stock market is just basically a way of making your money go to work for you. Okay. Now, there are several other aspects. There's the bond market. There's crypto, there's precious metals, there's a lot of things. But the idea is you need your money working for you. And a lot of people oftentimes say to me, hey, I want to get into investing, but I'm scared. Mm-hmm. Because what if the market goes down? What if I lose my money? And so what I often tell to them is that, number one, the biggest risk in life is never taking any risks. Okay, whether it's investing your money, whether it's changing your job, whether it's getting out of a toxic relationship with a significant other or a friendship or a parent, we always get afraid of change, and we're afraid of taking risks because we might fail, right? We're always afraid of failure. And that's what keeps us until the end of our life. And then we look back and say, I had one life to live, only one. And I blew it. I can't get that time back. It you don't get it back. Mm. You know what I mean? You don't get to go back and relive it. It's gone. And you wasted it. So, you know, that's back to the stock market, though, is that people say, I'm afraid to lose money. And I'm like, if you want a guarantee, I'll give you a guarantee. If you keep your money in your bank account, you will lose value every single year you hold it. That's a guarantee. Mm. Sometimes 3%, sometimes 8%. I don't understand what you mean. Okay. If you had $150,000 in 2000, the year 2000, and you put it in your bank account, guess how much money you have today? $150,000. You didn't lose any money. The average home cost in America in the year 2000 was $150,000. Mm. It's now $440,000. So, inflation. So, yeah, it's scary. You worry about, but that's the whole point of investing. Investing is about buying now for later down the road. It's money you don't need now. A great analogy that I use is if you buy a home and your house value, the market changes next year and your house is 20% less, are you concerned? No. Are you going to sell it? No. Did you lose anything? No. Because it's an investment. It doesn't matter what happens tomorrow or next year. You care 20, 20, 30 years down the road. And what do we know about real estate? Despite the dips, it always goes up.
Yeah. No, 100%, 100%. So for those who want to get in starting and investing in the stock market, crypto, things of that nature, what are some things that you feel like that they need to have done before they actually invest? Do they invest all their emergency fund? Do they invest, you know, all of their inheritance? What do they need to have in order before they really get into investing?
Well, the most important thing is what I call it, what's more important than making money is not losing money. Mm. Okay. And when I say not losing money, I don't mean necessarily buying something and it goes down. I mean, as in not leaving money on the table. So one thing that we're not taught, and people often think, oh, they're not taught this in school because of XYZ. Well, have you ever tried teaching financial stuff to a 14 or 15 or 16 year old? It's not, they're not going to listen. So it's almost a waste, you know. Well, geometry is a waste too, but whatever. So the most important thing is to understand how these things work. There are companies that make billions and billions of dollars off of ignorance. Mm. Okay. Now, the first thing is, are you working? Yes. Okay. Does your employer offer a 401k? Yes. Okay. Now, I'm going to give you an example. I was helping somebody in my community last week, and he got really passionate about getting a 401k started. So I said, you know what? I usually don't do this, but send me a copy of your stuff. He went to his HR, sent me a copy. The first three pages were a bunch of fancy sounding funds that he could put it into with a performance of 10 to 12% per year over the last 10 years.
Mm.
That sounds great. The S&P 500 did that for you anyways. But if you go to the left, all the ones on the first three pages had management fees between 0.75 and 1%. You might be saying to yourself, okay, you've lost me, Stocky. I don't know what that means. Okay. For every 1% management fee that your 401k charges, you lose 20% minimum of your retirement by the time you retire. So if you planned on retire at 65 for the $1 million, guess what? Surprise, you got to keep working because your management fees are gone.
Wow.
So I said, all right, go to the back page. Look for a Vanguard, BlackRock, whatever. Total market fund. You can choose aggressive. You can choose based on what the performance is. And look at what it is on the back page because they have to give you these options. They just hide it. 0.05%. That means he's going to lose 2%. When he retires. That means he keeps 98% of his money. And some people get 2%, 3%, 4%, which gives them 50% of their income gone. So number one, 401k. Find out if your employer matches. If your employer matches, that's free money. A lot of employers match. They'll give you 100% up to 5%. So if you make $50,000, you put $2,500 a year, they give you free $2,500. It's 100% return. And that compounds every year. Then you have your IRA. Difference between a traditional and a Roth. I prefer Roth IRAs. Because you pay all your taxes now, and you don't have to worry about how many taxes down the road. You don't pay it off. You can do whatever you want. That's right there. Then there's the HSA. Why not? It's a match. It's tax exempt. These are things that
can you explain the HSA to them?
Yeah. So if you want a little in depth, I'm not going to plug my own stuff, but there's you can Google it, you can YouTube it if you want. An HSA is basically a health savings account. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is in a case of like in our area, like my wife had, you can put up to $500 a year, and you can actually invest it after the first year, and your employer matches 100% sometimes. So now you get a free $500. It's tax exempt.
Yeah.
It rolls over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you get to invest it. So now you get a free 100% match on this. What is the catch? You can only use it for medical, but that's perfect because here's the five-head move, right? Here's the thing. Get the 100% return, invest it, let it grow, compound that every year. Don't use it. Use your employer health insurance, right? Because it's discounted, you pay the premium on it. Don't use your HSA now. Let that grow exponentially. Then that gap between the time you retire or stop working and you get Medicare, right? There's a gap there. And that's when everyone goes bankrupt because now you don't have employer insurance and you're not getting government help. You're on your own. Well, guess what? You didn't touch that HSA. You got 100% match. You invested it. And now you're covered. You don't have to worry about working longer just so you can keep your benefits because you were smart with it.
No, yeah, that's
beautiful. I could go on and on and on, but
no,
these are the
basics. I think that was beautiful because I don't think people understand that the medical costs will is really eating people that's trying to retire. Like that's what's really was like hindering people from retiring. So that health savings account, if y'all want to know what HSA is, the health savings account can really, you know, really go against that risk of having to pay for medical expenses. And it's in the stock market, so it grows, you know, compounded each year. So it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And tax exempt, and it rolls over.
Exactly. I'm not gonna lie to you. I forgot where we was at with the conversation.
We were talking about how do people get started investing?
Yes.
But we're just we're passionate about the subject, so we're kind of running on this. But yeah, so those are the basic things right there. As far as getting it started in investing, as far as the stock market, how do you do it? I mean, you know, you can open up a brokerage through anybody now. You know, a lot of people say, I would rather put it in my own account rather than in an HSA or an IRA or 401k because I don't want to get penalized by taking it out early. That's fair. However, you get double taxed on that. You get your income tax paid out of your paycheck, you put it in the market, and then you pay capital gains tax on it. So you want to max out the ones that are tax advantages, like 401ks and a Roth IRA, in my opinion, HSA. Now you're putting that money away and you're like, oh, well, I don't know, but I'm afraid to put that much money in there because what if I need the money for something else? That's where an emergency fund comes in.
Yeah.
Right? You have that. Everybody feels like their net worth, how much money they have, how much they're worth is how much money's in their bank account. And let me tell you the difference. Rich people have a lot of money. Wealthy people have assets.
Yeah.
Okay? Rich people have money. Wealthy people have assets. And the reason I say that is rich people buy things that depreciate in value or leave their money to die. Because it makes them feel big. You buy a car, it depreciates in value. Well, Stocky, what about this year? Okay, there's an anomaly. Well, what about a 1982 Lamborghini? Okay, there's an anomaly.
Yeah.
A car is a depreciating asset. You're showing off to people who don't care about you. You're losing money. A TV is a depreciating asset. Okay? Those are depreciating assets. That's things. Okay? Assets are things that grow in value over time. You don't leave money in cash. It's better to buy gold bars, okay, or silver bars with your cash and put it in your mattress, okay, than to just have cash, all right? I only keep cash on hand for my emergency fund and my taxes. That's it. I do not keep an extra dime in my bank account because you know what? 7 to 8% inflation right now, the market's making 7 to 10% a year. Why would I lose 7 when I could make 7?
No, 100%. I think that's brilliant. You know, for those who are skeptical about the stock market, I know there's different risk tolerance and risk levels. Can you explain where some of the things that they can really invest in for those who may be risk adverse versus those who are more risky?
So for me, I'm a big believer in not trying to time the market or think that you're going to get something specific, right? If you know the market, you've been doing it for 20 years, then you try to do it and you'll probably still not outpace the market. Let me give you a little fun, and I shouldn't say this, but I'm the one guy on the internet who's not trying to sell a lie or a dream.
Yeah.
95% of people who actively trade will not beat just leaving their money in the market.
Wow.
And you say to yourself, that doesn't make sense. Why would so many people try to time and buy and sell and everything like that if 95% of them would just leave it in the market and forget about it and make more money? And the ones who do beat it, most of them, it's not worth the amount of stress and time and everything that goes through it. Why would you do that? Why do people go to casinos? Why do people play poker? Okay. People want either the thrill or they believe that they're going to be that one person out of 100 that are going to do it. Okay. People watch me all the time and they say, well, you always win. You always win. No, I don't. I don't always win. I make a lot of losses, but let me tell you something. You could win 9 times out of 10 and still be losing overall. You could win only 1 out of 10 times, lose 9 times and still be up overall. It's about discipline. It's about being smart with the money. The casino always wins. Why do you think a big winner in a casino gets comped the presidential suite? Because they know you're going to give it back, right? No one ever wins big in a casino and walks out. So, as far as risk, my belief is get a very low value or very low expense ratio total market fund. My favorite is called VOO, V-O-O. It's Vanguard, which is usually run by people. Total market. It has a expense ratio, which we talked about with 401ks, of 0.03%, right? So nothing. They also pay a 1% divvy. So now they cover the expense ratio plus some, and it just follows the entire market. Why try to figure out if Tesla is going to go up or down this week, or if Microsoft is going to do well on their earnings? Why not just let the whole market take you, right? And then that's kind of how I like doing it. If you want, you know, some more risk, there's always, you know, you can diversify into other bundles of stocks or different sectors like technology or an emerging sector, and you want to diversify too. You know, I'm not really diversified. My biggest diversities right now are stocks and dividends. I think dividends are the biggest secret in the world, and every single person is afraid to buy it because they're told it's boomer ways of investing. Mm. And you know something? It is boomer ways of investing. But let me tell you something that boomers have that we don't. Money.
No, I think that's big. I think that's huge. I think we also need to talk about the difference between a individual stock, a mutual fund, and a ETF. Mm-hmm.
So an individual stock, so this is how stocks work. Stocks are basically a piece of a company, right? So let's imagine that a company is a building made out of bricks, right? And they want to raise some money because they want to, let's say the building makes tires, okay? And they want to upgrade to the newest tire machine because they figure, hey, if we have more money, we buy a better tire machine, we can make more tires, we'll make more money. All right, cool. How do we get money? I don't know. How about we sell part of our company and tell people, give us money for this. We're going to take the money and do this with it, which is going to make us more money. And then now our company is going to be more valuable, meaning that your piece of our company is more valuable. What do you think about that? I don't know. Let me check into you. Okay. So every year you've made more money and you've got more demand and people want more tires. You just can't keep up. So if you do make more tires and you keep up, you will make more money. Sure. I'll buy a brick of your building.
Right?
And so that's what everybody does is they buy little pieces of it, and that's a stock, right? And if the company buys the tire machine and a worker, you know, messes it up and the CEO is having an affair and this and that and that, and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, this is not going good. You know something? I don't think that this is going well. I'm going to give my brick to someone else. Yeah. Hopefully it's worth more than when I bought it. If not, here, you take it. Maybe they change it around and make money. I don't want that risk. That is what buying a stock is basically like. A mutual fund is a managed fund where a group of individuals or a company basically take your money, and for a fee, they'll sell you. You don't have to worry about it. We'll handle it for you. We'll handle it for you. You just do your thing. We're going to charge you a fee, but you don't have to worry about it. We're experts in this. Fun fact, most mutual funds don't outpace you just putting your money in the market. And the ones that do, you lose that to the management
fees. Yeah.
Because once again, they make money off of people's ignorance, right? You don't know. And you may not make a lot of money, and you'll go to them and say, how come I'm not making as much money as if the market goes? And they're like, well, that's because we have you in safe stuff. So you may not be making much now, but when the market crashes, we're going to save you. That's more important. And then you have index funds and ETFs. These are large bundles of stocks that are not managed actively. They're just kind of like, they do get shifted around sometimes, but they're just kind of like left alone and you buy into it. It's got a low management fee because it's not actively managed. And it's just a bundle of stocks like VU, Total Market, Bug Cyber. These are cybersecurity ETFs. You've got XLF, that's banks and financials. You can pick if you want a total market or a slice of the market.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Like, for those who do not understand, VU is like the ticker symbol. So it's VOO. You can type it in. You can look up what that stock is doing.
Yeah, and like Tesla is TSLA.
Exactly.
And Microsoft is MSFT. VOO is a Vanguard. There's also VTI. There's so many others out there. It's all about, some are riskier, some are more conservative. But I like the idea of, you know what? Buy it and forget it. And to be honest, my long-term portfolios, you want to know the only time I open them?
What is
when I'm buying more.
Mm.
I don't, it's a long-term thing. Like, yeah. I don't open up Zillow every day and see the value of my home. Same thing with my investing account. People got to stop thinking this is a long-term thing.
And when you mean by long-term, how many years you're talking?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. And this is where I often get a lot of backlash from other communities on the internet. And that's that I hate the idea of FIRE. Are you familiar with FIRE?
You said the FIRE?
FIRE. Financial independence, retire early.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. So there's this major movement over the past decade, especially online. It's called the FIRE movement. It stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. And it's all about living a minimalistic lifestyle and cutting every cost you can to hoard and save money and invest money so you can retire early.
I have heard of that.
Live your life.
I never heard an acronym, but I have heard of that.
Yeah, yeah. They call it the FIRE, the financial independence. I don't like that. I hate that for two reasons. Number one, if you sacrifice your best years of your life and don't enjoy them, sure, you may have more money when you're older, but you're not going to be able to enjoy it, right? Mm. You're going to look back and say, wow, I didn't go on that trip. I didn't go on that, you know, that excursion. I didn't see the play I wanted to see. I didn't go to the Eiffel Tower. I didn't do any of that. I can do it now, but I'm older. I can't get in. You know, I don't like that. I don't like the idea of blowing all your money and worrying about it later. I think there's a healthy balance. Mm. It's a very, very healthy balance out there. You cannot give up your experiences just because you want to save money. All right. But more importantly, the reason I hate FIRE is the last two letters, and that's retire early. I hate the word retire. In my opinion, the word retire is a death sentence. Mm. And the reason that I say that is my grandfather is in his 80s now, and he had his 80th birthday. I went, and all of his friends were around him. And my grandfather stopped working in his 50s, and he was a police officer for 30 years, so he got his pension. But he kept working. He went and worked for private security, and then he wrote books, and then he did talks. Another one of his buddies got out and started his own floral business. A guy. He liked doing exotic flowers and buying them and selling them. He just loved it. Another one of them got into art and started doing sculptures and stuff like that, right? And then the other ones that retired the same age were also there. The ones that had retired and did nothing were either dead or looked like they were coming out of the grave. Mm. These guys look 30 years younger. And why is that? Because when we think retirement, we think stop working. I got to retire. Stop working. But what happens when you stop working? As humans, we are creatures that are driven. And so when you stop working and you don't have another plan, you just begin to die. And you think to yourself, well, no, that's crazy. I am going to go travel. Go for it. After the first year, you're broke. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to do that forever. Oh, well, I'll just, I'll go fishing. That's fun for a month.
For a while. Yeah.
And then it's boring. Okay. Oh, well, I'll sit and watch Jeopardy. Oh, that's great. You just sit and watch TV and play video games all day. You'll just be dead and you'll be sore and you don't live it. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't like the idea of retire early. I also don't mean keep working forever. I call my way of looking at it is called FIFU. FIFU, financial independence, FU money. And when I say FU money, I don't mean like billions of dollars. I mean, I have enough money that if I want to keep working, I do it. If I don't, I go find something else to do. I don't have to take shit from anybody because I have the financial independence, but I'm going to keep doing something. If I want to go volunteer and work as a dog walker, or I want to go work for the city parks and help, you know, whatever, or I want to keep working in my field full time, but I don't, you know, my boss, I don't like anymore. I'm out. I'm going somewhere. I enjoy this. That's what I like. The idea is that FIFU, that's how I look at it.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
I told you I can get long-winded.
No, I'm right there with you. I'm loving listening to you talk, you know, because I agree with everything you're saying. Like, when I see people retire, it's something happened to their body, you know, even health-wise. You know, it's for some reason them sitting down, not having that push, not having that, you know, that getting up and go get it spirit anymore. It does something to
we need to have a purpose.
Exactly.
Humans, we have to have a purpose.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's big. Now, what do you say to your community for those who want to learn, to want to study the company before they invest it? You know, they say they want to invest in Tesla. Where can they go to learn more about Tesla to see if that's a good fit for them?
I mean, when you're looking at a company, it's very difficult because here's the thing. Every time somebody, I get the question all the time, hey, I want to get started. Where's a good book I could read? Where's a good book on this? The problem is that our world, our market, just like our world, evolves so fast that by the time the book is published and on the shelves, it's outdated. Okay. Yeah. For example, 15 years ago, if you wanted to find a company to invest in, you looked for a profit to earnings ratio, right? How much money they make versus how much their stock is worth and how many years it takes. So if you had a profit to earning ratio of 5, you're saying, okay, it will take 5 years worth of their current profit to give them the valuation that their stock is at based on their last earnings. But now you have Tesla was the first one, the profit to earning ratio of 1,000, 300, 500. And historically, that means the company is way overpriced and it's going to crash, but not anymore. And now you have retail traders, you have algorithms and computers, you have this. You can look at a company's financials and say, okay, they're continuing to grow, they're continuing to expand, or they're continuing to consolidate, or, you know, this is a sector that is growing. Like I got into, for example, cybersecurity, very big, big sector. I decided 2 years ago to get into Palo Alto. Why Palo Alto? Why not just the whole ETF? ETFs are great, but I wanted to be more hands-on approach. So I started saying to myself, okay, why cybersecurity? Well, number one, COVID hit. And now everybody is online. Everybody is work from home. Everyone is distance learning. Everyone's playing video games. The world just went more online. More people online means more attacks or more potential attacks or more need for security, especially for large corporations, right? You're Microsoft, Facebook, Google. You have thousands and thousands of employees. You know, you pay for a certain amount. But now they're all out of the office and a lot of it's sensitive material. You got to up your game, right? So that means money's going to flow there. So then I started saying to myself, which company do I think is the best one? So I started looking at what companies have what contracts, how much revenue they made, where's their next revenue, where are they expanding to, what companies are they working with, you know, and sort of like that. And so I came to the conclusion that Palo Alto was the one I wanted to buy. And I'm very happy I did because it's insane run. And then with all the Russian hacking and everything going on right now, and I still think cybersecurity with the post-COVID world is there. So that was more of a speculative. And then I kind of looked at it. Could I have been wrong? Sure. Or could I have bought one and the other one went more? Fine. You know, if you don't want to look for it, get an ETF. Get a bundle of it that just says, okay, I want all of them. Fuck it. I want to be in cybersecurity. I just don't know what company. Give me cyber bug hack, whatever the ETF is. Yeah, I like to look at trends. I like to look at what the future is going to be. And it may change. A company that's good today may not be good in 20 years. I mean, look at the top stocks in 1990 versus today. I mean, there's not the same ones anymore, right? I mean, they change. Times change. Companies change. The world's needs change.
Yeah, so you study the trends and what's happening, and you think futurely in the head.
Yeah, so there's a big difference between investing and trading. I always tell everybody, be an investor first and a trader last. Not second, last, okay? Investor first. Get your money together from your job. Get your emergency fund, depending on what your network is. People say, well, how much is an emergency fund? And everybody's like, well, 6 months. No. There is no cookie cutter blanket answer. It all depends on your network.
Yes.
If you have family that live nearby, if your family has assets, if you have people, then guess what? You can have less money in your emergency fund and more working for you in the market because if something happens, you can fall back on them. If you're like I was and you have nobody, you got to do 12 months of your expenses, not your budget, because people budget stupid crap. Your actual living expenses, I say, you know, it was 12 months plus 10% for an emergency.
Yeah.
If I didn't have that, I didn't mess with my money. I had that first. So, you know, you've always got to decide where that is. But as far as speculative, you know, and trading, I just look for trends. We just made a bunch of money. I made a bunch of money on wheat because when Russia first started putting troops up on Ukraine's border, I didn't think they were going to invade. Nobody did. And then once they started invading, I started looking at what's going to be affected if this lasts more than a day. And so I didn't buy right away, but then I looked and I said, okay, what's the biggest crops that come out of there? So I noticed that Russia and Ukraine make up 30% of the global wheat production.
Wow.
And output. And I said, if Ukraine is under bombardment, people are fleeing, refugees, they're fighting, whatever happens, people aren't going to be able to farm. And if they aren't able to farm, they can't get it out. And if they can't get it out and do that, then they can't plant seeds for the next year. So that's a lot of missing, you know, wheat. Russia makes up even more if they're all fighting. So I said, you know what? I think the price of wheat is probably going to go up if this lasts. So I bought stock in wheat and started going up and up and up. And then Russia took over the southern port city and messed up the Black Sea. Well, now not only can they not harvest it, but the harvesting they do, they can't ship out because the Russians took it over. And then it went up even more. So I look for stuff like that. Now, some people might say, well, you're profiting off war. No, I'm not. I'm profiting off of supply and demand differential in the global markets. That's all. It could have been. I did the same thing with coffee in Brazil last year when there was a drought in Brazil and COVID was happening in Vietnam. I knew that Sumatra beans were not going to come from there and there's less in Brazil. Price goes up. And that's how I work at. Same thing in companies as well.
Where did that curiosity come from? That like trying to figure out what's going on and see how, you know, how it could benefit, you know, the stock market. Where did you get that curiosity to come up with those questions in your head? How did that develop?
It's like a puzzle. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes it's not about making money. It's about feeling like you cracked the code. You know what I mean? It's like you're trying to crack a code. So it's like watching, you know, National Treasure, right? Like he's going from here to put this together to that together, and he finds the treasure at the end. The treasure is great, right?
Yeah.
But the chase, the putting it together and being like this, and if this happens and that happens and that happens, wow. And all those things come into place, and you're like, you know what I mean? Like you feel like you cracked the code and you're hungry for another one. And so kind of that's how it's gone for me. Now, has it always worked? No. But once again, that goes back to that discipline. If it doesn't work, doesn't mean you're bad at it. Doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means it didn't work. Because remember, you're not in control of the market. Other people, computers, big money is. So even if you're right about everything, the play could still go against you. But don't worry. There's a million other plays and a million other days. There's always another one. And I look at it like relationships, right? People say, oh, I'm going to hold this stock because I think it's going to go up. Well, let me ask you this. How many people watching this right now are in a relationship that is shit?
Mm.
It's toxic, whether it's with a family member, whether it's with a significant other, whether it's with a friend. And you're in that relationship for two reasons. One, maybe it'll get better. Or B, number two, the sunk cost fallacy. I've put money or time into this, therefore I am committed to it. I can't let it go until I recoup what I put into it. No. Because just like that stock that you don't sell and you bag hold forever, you could have sold that for a loss, sure, and jumped on to something that was going up and made all the money in the world. But no, all those opportunities went by while you were sitting here saying, I know it's going to go up. I believe it's going to go up. Think about that in your life. You're in a relationship with a man or a woman and you're not in love anymore, or they're abusive, or they treat you like crap, or, you know, you just don't feel it anymore, but you stay with them because, you know, I don't want to be alone, or it's going to get better, or they're going to change. And you do that for so long, and all the opportunities to find the perfect person, you never get a chance to go out and find that opportunity. You let it all pass you by because you're so tunnel vision on this. Think of it like friends. We are friends with people because that we don't even like. I canceled my Facebook because I looked around one day and said, I don't care about any of the people I'm friends with here. I don't like any of these people. I just went to school with them or met them somewhere or friends of something, and it makes me feel like I'm not alone. But I don't give a shit. So I deleted it, and I said, you know what? If I want to be with somebody, let me get their phone number and, you know, whatever, and we'll talk. And that's the thing. We oftentimes stay with people and stay with things because we're just so afraid of change or being alone or it's going to get better, and it's not. And I think that, you know, family is the worst. I see so many people keep helping people that hurt them because, oh, they're my family. It's the right thing to do. No, any decision that's made based on guilt is already a bad decision.
I agree with everything you're saying. You know,
I had to make that decision 2 years ago with my brother, and he died, and it was hard, but I knew that I was making a decision that could affect my life based on guilt, and I knew it was the wrong decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that every person has to really, really go through, and they have to be able to make those healthy decisions, you know, because if they don't, they're going to continue to kind of be in a rat race or feel guilty or feel trapped or feel stuck. Therefore, now they're in a marriage they don't want to be in. Now they're raising a family with somebody they necessarily don't want to be with. And now the kids are affected by all those things. You know, we can talk about that all day for sure. But I want to know.
And back to what we were saying at the beginning of this, you only get one life.
Exactly.
50 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, are you going to look back and be proud and say that you made, you made the decisions that were the right ones for you and that you were happy? Or are you going to look back and say, I wasted it and it's gone. I can't get it back.
How, what about your community? Like, since you have started, you know, your Twitch channel, and I know it's popping, I know it's good, it's really good information in there. I'm sure you have seen some life-changing impact within that community. So can you describe what it's like, you know, really having that responsibility to the community and how those people are really benefiting from following you?
You know, I wouldn't say that. I always tell them whenever they thank me for something, I always tell them, don't thank me. Okay. It was you that made the decision. It was you that did the change. You did this. I just helped you get it out. That's all. It wasn't me that changed it. It wasn't me that made you do this. It was you all along. You just needed the spark, right? And so that's what I try to tell them. And I get a lot of thank yous because people find me and watch me for a lot of different reasons. Some people, it's because they were stuck home from COVID and they were working, or they're working from home. And I'm like the boomer of Twitch, right? Like, I'm turning 37 next month. Mm-hmm. And in the streaming world, which I just started streaming a couple of years ago, I'm old, right? But a lot of people look up to me as a father figure. And at first, I was really uncomfortable knowing that. But then I was like, I finally got to a point where I kind of embraced it. I didn't get to the point where, you know, I was, you know, saying, oh, well, this is normal and it's okay. But I started understanding and embracing why they were doing this. So many people out there didn't have a father who was present, or, you know, didn't have the questions they needed answered for them. So many different things. And I was like, okay, you know what? I will talk about money. I'll talk about finance, and I'll also try to help people out. And so many people have reached out to me for different reasons. I'll give you an example. When the COVID happened in 2020, and rates went to zero, rates plunged so much. And I was screaming at everyone, go refinance your home. Go refinance your home. The rates are at 2.5%. You're not going to see this again. And if you do, there's already other bigger problems. And so many people went out and they're like, well, I don't understand what he means. So I said, you know what? Let me use my weird humor to explain this to people. And so I said, all right, here's the thing. If you have a $300,000 house and you pay 4.5% on this, right? You are going to pay $600,000 for your $300,000 house, half of which is just interest on your loan over the course of 30 years. So you're going to give the bank the same value that you're paying. You're paying $600,000 for it. I said, but guess what? If you go now and refinance, even if you only get 1% cheaper, that's $75,000 in your pocket.
Huge.
$75,000. I just made you $75,000. Yep. And that's at the worst end. And so many people flooded me and said, hey, thank you so much. I refinanced from a 5% to a 2.5%. And I got a 15-year. I refinanced. I did this. I did that. That was amazing. I started helping people understand the difference between paying down your principal and getting your high interest debt, credit cards. So many people, young people, are hampered by student debt and credit cards, especially credit cards, and it gets out of their hands because they never understood how to work that and how compounding interest works. And now they're paying off 122% APR with a 24% APR. And I was like, you know what? Rates are low. Go to your credit union or your bank. Get a personal loan. Consolidate all your cards at once, pay them all off, and instead of paying five different loans at 25% interest, pay one loan at 7% interest. And it got them started on the path to financial independence and financial education. The thing is that you're not supposed to know all this stuff because that is what our economy is built on. We call it the fear and greed cycle, or the debt cycle, right? And it's the fear and greed. I'm greedy. I want this thing that's flashy or new that everyone else has, right? So I buy it. But now I'm afraid that I won't be able to afford it, so I better keep working. And then, you know, and working and working and working and working and doing all these other things. And now I've got enough money. Oh my God, I'm greedy again. And it's a cycle. It's a debt cycle. You buy something, you go in debt, you have to work in order to pay it off. And then there's something else you want to buy that you see everybody else with. That's why influencers get paid. I take almost no sponsorships. I get 10 sponsorships a month sometimes. Mm. I will take maybe one because it's so important that I'm open and honest with my community. And that's the reason why, at least this is what I'm told, is that I'm the only one still left. Mm. All the internet stock people have disappeared. when the market crashed, because they were all selling courses. They were telling us, trying to sell, you know, lies. There were scams. They were trying to make money off people. All the while, they're making money in a bull market. I mean, in 2020, 2021, you could have bought anything and made money on it. Everyone seemed like a genius, right? But me, I'm never trying to prove how good I am. I'm never trying to tell anybody to do what I do. I just do my thing and try to help people. So, yeah, it really feels good. One person actually, because I don't share my private messages I get, but and emails, but somebody found a bunch of things on Twitter and of people thanking me for certain things, and I didn't know this, and took a big collage of it last year and shared it with me, and I almost got emotional. It's nice to know that you're leaving a mark.
Yeah, no, I think that is beautiful, and you know, that's why when I came across your content, it was just watching some of the things, and I was like, this guy is special, and this guy has the right heart and has the right intention. So part of me, you know, reaching out to you was not only because I knew you knew what you were talking about and to educate my audience. I also want to tell you and give you your flowers. Like, what you're doing is life changing. What you're doing is inspiring me. It's impactful to me. And it's impactful to a lot of people that are listening to you that haven't told you yet. And I think that it is important to give people their flowers and their credit right now, because I also am a content creator. I have had those messages before where you have changed people's lives. And I also understand where you are so in front of the camera, sometimes you don't know exactly how big an impact and legacy, you know, you have. So I'm here to tell you, like, man, like, I personally want to thank you on behalf of a consumer, but also as a content creator, because there's not a lot of people here that have, you know, their followers first. They have the right intentions for their followers. A lot of them about their name, about their brand, about their money. But, you know, people like you.
That's the thing. And you understand that. You understand how it is. I mean, my community is what makes me. I try to thank them all the time. I say, listen, guys, I roast you guys. You roast me. We have a good time. I mean, I turn on my stream every day at the same time. They turn it on, and it's just a bunch of people having fun and people laughing and new people coming in. But I always tell them, listen, I have this opportunity because of you. And I get told a lot, you know, why don't you ask for subs more often? Why don't you ask for money? Why don't you do this? And I'm like, because, you know what, if I do, you know, sell out and do this or that or whatever like that, sure, I can make some money in the short term, but then people lose the trust in me. Mm-hmm. And these guys show up every day, they support me, and I'm obviously giving them something, but they're giving me so much more than I could ever give them. And that trust and that bond and that, you know, the what we have there is going to last much longer than me selling out for a couple bucks here and there or trying to scam somebody. It's not my thing. And I was just, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was just alluding to the fact that, you know, the same with you, you know, you understand you can't forget why you have what you have and who is responsible for it. Sure. You don't owe them anything. Like, you don't owe them anything personally, because that's not how the relationship works, right? You like I don't, somebody gives me a dono or a sub. I don't, that doesn't mean that I'm going to go do something for them personally, right? So there's always that, but they have an understanding just like I do that we need each other. We need each other for whatever reason it is. We need each other. And I think as long as you respect that and people know that, you know, that they're the reason you have what you have, you'll continue to have it.
Great. Last question. What was the impact of you getting your finances in order? How did that affect you personally, you know, with your confidence, with your self-esteem, things of that nature?
I always joke and say there's no such thing as an ugly man, only a broke man. and it's funny. And my wife and I had this conversation. She's like, you know, I think that, you know, Elon Musk is hotter. I think Jeff Bezos is hot. I said, no, you think he's hot because he's rich. I said, there's a difference between fame bringing wealth and wealth bringing fame. Okay. That's it. All right. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Don't come at me. And I look forward to the hate comments, but, as far as for me, it's never brought me confidence per se at the idea of like total confidence. Like, I'm never content, not just because I'm always driven, but because I come from a background where, like, for example, it doesn't matter how much money I make. I was in LA last weekend or 2 weekends ago and for an award show, and I was ordering DoorDash to my Airbnb. And you know which one I bought? The first one that was a discount. I mean, that's just who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
I drive a 2006 Corolla. You know what I mean? Like, I am always remembering where I came from, and it doesn't hold me back, but it stops me from getting ahead of myself.
I love
that. And so I don't focus on my money. I just know in the back of my head that I'm being smart with it, and I'm always kind of like, if I don't have to spend the money, I don't. Now, don't get me wrong. I still enjoy my life. I have a new daughter now, my wife. I take care of them, but I don't waste my money. I did that in my 20s, and you know something? I'm lucky to have what I have now because I wasted a lot of time. But at the same time, for anybody watching this, let me tell you something. You may look at yourself right now and say, I'm 20, 25, 28, 30. I don't have my shit together. I'm so far behind. Let me tell you something. No one has their shit together.
Mm.
Okay? Some people just get better at pretending. And what you see online is just people putting their highlight reel out there.
Mm.
Okay? Everyone is dealing with struggles. Everyone is dealing with stuff. I know people who look like they're rich that are $200,000 in debt. Husband's an alcoholic. Wife is cheating.
Mm.
It's terrible. But you look at their Facebook, they look like they have it all. Don't worry about other people. Focus on you because you know something. In 20, 30 years, okay, those people aren't going to be around. You're going to be there, and you're going to be either saying, you know what? I'm glad I lived my life for me and made my right decisions for money and finances and investing and purchases and who I want to be around rather than living for other people because they're gone, and I lived my life for me, and I'm happy and content. Not, wow, I just lived a lie for 30 years, and it's gone.
Jason, man, I'm be honest with you. I'm truly blessed by this conversation. You know, like one of the things that I really am just so glad to hear is just how you have this desire to stay grounded and be authentic, you know, and really go after this, be yourself. You know, that's the biggest thing, especially in this industry. It's hard for people to stay grounded and not get above themselves. But for you to have that same passion and then for you to have a wife, you know, a daughter, a family, and you know that's where, you know, the real wealth is really beautiful to see. And like I said, I personally want to commend you and you know, it. That's why I wanted to do this. I knew you were a guy that I am proud to get this person out there so more people can go into your community because I'm like, man, this is the guy. A stamp of approval. You know I'm going to be in the community more because I know for a fact that you have the right desire, you have the right intention, you're here to help, and that's what we need more in today's world.
Yeah, but just remember, if you do show up, it is live and unscripted.
Yeah,
and you're probably gonna hear a lot of mom jokes, but hey, listen, I am what I am. Okay?
No, be you. No, and I think that's the biggest thing. Be you. You know what I mean? And I think there's a you cannot sacrifice, you know, who you are for the audience at all.
No, my audience appreciates me being authentic, and I think you guys understand that just as well.
100%. So where can they find you? Where's your, you know, where's your Twitch channel? Where can they reach out to say thank you? Where's that information?
I mean, you know, like I said, if you guys if anybody out there is looking to learn about this or just find a community of people that like to roast me roast them back, jokes, fun time, while you're working during the day, I stream live every weekday, every market open day from 9:30 Eastern to 1:30 Eastern PM. If you're on YouTube, you can go to my YouTube channel at The Stock Guy, and my link is in there. Or you can just go to twitch.tv/The Stock Guy. You can find me. Looking forward to anybody that comes in. You're welcome in. It's going to be a wild ride every single day. You never know what you're going to get. The only thing I ask is that you lower your standards and lower your expectations before you come in so you're not disappointed.
Oh man, Jason, I really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show, educating, sharing your story as well. You know, I love hearing how your story was and how you are today. I think that is truly inspiring. You need to write a book, honestly.
Nobody reads books anymore. I haven't read a book in 20 years.
Oh man. Well, everyone, make sure you all go after Jason. Make sure you tell him what he has taught you, what you have learned from him. Make sure you reach out and say thank you as well. My name is Chris, the star of the show. I'll be back next week, and we are joined by
Jason, the Stock Guy, TSG, Stocky, Baldy, whatever you want to call me, as long as you're having a good time.
All right, this is Chris, and I'll see y'all next week. Boo!